John, the chapter 1. Am I on? Can you hear me? Okay. No? We'll see. So from 1 John, the beginning of the letter, we hear this word from God. We declare to you what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands, concerning the word of life. This life was revealed, and we have seen it, and testify to it, and declare to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was revealed to us. We declare to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. We are writing these things so that our joy may be complete. This is the message we have heard from Him and proclaim to you, that God is light, and in God there is no darkness at all. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Today and for the next 5 weeks, we, the preachers here at Wildwood Church, are going to be focusing our attention on what are called the great ends of the church. This outline of 6 goals for congregations and for our entire denomination is included in our Book of Order, one of 2 volumes which constitute the primary constitutional foundation of our church. Now, we don't know the original author of these great ends of the church. We don't know the circumstances in which they were composed. Back in 1910, one of our predecessor Presbyterian denominations adopted them. We Presbyterians are people who like to do our business decently and in order, and so there often are careful records of every debate that takes place at the national level. But my research seems to indicate that these great ends of the church simply appeared as a gift, and the Presbyterians adopted them, and they've been part of our tradition ever since. And so as we were planning preaching for this fall, we thought it would be a good idea to share these great ends of the church with you and invite reflection and conversation among us about them. Goal number 1 is the proclamation of the gospel for the salvation of humankind. Let me say that again. Goal number 1 is the proclamation of the gospel for the salvation of humankind. Greg is the one who assigned these different goals and ends for us, and he sort of laughed and said, "I'm giving you the easy one, Greg." But those of you who know me well would understand immediately that proclaiming is not my strong suit. When I have something to say, my preferred way to say it is quietly and calmly in a conversation. Proclaiming seems to be about raising your voice, about getting loud and making big arm motions and stuff like that. But standing in a public place, proclaiming in that way, is something I have never, ever done in my whole career. Nothing even close to it. And so I first of all must ask all of you who are listening to this sermon to listen quite carefully to make sure that my sermon on proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ for the salvation of humankind doesn't get some kind of a spin on it that makes this goal one that I am more comfortable with. So, if you hear me saying that this goal is achieved by all of us engaging in quiet conversation, please get your hand up, wave at me or something, get me back on track. Now, some of you at least know that a couple weeks ago, my wife Ann and I returned from a vacation which included a week on the island of Iona on the west coast of Scotland. This little island has been a Celtic place of spiritual pilgrimage for centuries. So for a week, Ann and I were there with about 75 other people as pilgrims. And my son and daughter-in-law and my three grandchildren were also included in this trip. It was a wonderful, memorable experience. Every day we learned about Celtic spirituality. We worshiped with the community every morning and every night. We hiked around Iona, which was a wonderful experience. We even helped with the chores. I got to work in the kitchen, which was hardly work for me. The Christian presence on the island of Iona began about 1,500 years ago, back in the 500s, when the man whom we call St. Columba and 12 of his fellow monks arrived from Ireland in a boat that they had sailed, which was built of wood and leather, a leather boat to go across the ocean. St. Columba was from a prominent Irish family. He was well-to-do. He was a member of a successful monastic community, but he had to leave all that behind as punishment for what in our day we would call a copyright offense. But he had to leave because of what he'd done. And so he and his 12 friends sailed away from Ireland and landed on what is now called St. Columba's Bay on the island of Iona. And they found it to be a good home for their new community. There was a good source of fresh water. There were fields on which they could plant their grain. And so they built a church and a monastery. And after a while, near the monastery, the island's inhabitants formed a village. And Iona became a very busy place. For centuries, there were pilgrims coming all the time, and the place thrived. Now, not every moment on the island, even though it's a holy place, was good. There were times when Viking raiders attacked the monastery and plundered all the treasures of the monks and the community. In about 1100, it seems odd to talk about things now 1,000 years ago, a large stone abbey was constructed by a group of Benedictine monks on the same site that Columba had originally built his church. And about a century later, there was a nunnery built, another substantial building, to house the women. But after the Protestant Reformation, when there were huge power struggles in England and in Iona between Protestants and Catholics, the monastery and the convent were closed, and over time, again centuries, the buildings fell into ruin. Early in the 20th century, a Scottish Presbyterian pastor named George MacLeod founded the Iona community with a vision of rebuilding Iona as a place for worship for all Christians. And so during the difficult economic times that followed World War I, Pastor MacLeod brought unemployed stonemasons and unemployed carpenters to Iona, and they rebuilt the Abbey Church. And they created facilities once again where pilgrims could go. The people who welcomed us, the place where we stayed, was a part of this Iona community as it exists today. Staffed by members of that community and by volunteers who came from all over the world to work in this place for weeks or for months or for years. Now, I've told you this story about Iona and my experience there, as we're thinking about proclaiming the gospel for the salvation of humankind, in order to broaden our vision beyond this place and this time. The goals of the church, the great ends of the church, must include the church in faraway places and in distant times. The broad, overarching goals of the church, the fundamentals of the Christian life do not change, even as the centuries pass, and even as life changes dramatically. So this gospel, which we must proclaim in our day and in our place, this gospel, which is for the salvation of humankind in every time and every place, is the same gospel as the foundations of faith on which St. Columba and his friends built their lives in a Scottish remote island centuries ago. So what is that gospel? What is it that we proclaim? The writer of the letter of 1 John, in the passage I read to you, tells us plainly. He wrote, "This is the message we have heard from him and proclaim to you, that God is light, and in God there is no darkness at all." That's the message. This message that God is like a bright, glowing illumination that pushes back and overcomes every darkness in every corner of the entire creation. And this message, which was proclaimed by John so many years ago, was not for him just pleasing words that were fun to write. It was his experience. "We declare to you what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands concerning the word of life. We have seen it and testify to it and declare to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was revealed to us." So this first great end of the church consists of telling people, proclaiming what we have experienced. When we as a denomination or as individuals or as a congregation work to achieve this goal, we proclaim a gospel message that consists of what we have heard with our own ears. Our message tells of sights that we have seen with our own eyes, visions we will never forget. This gospel must be about things we have held with our own hands, which revealed in the holding something deep and saving and true about life, about all that exists. I think this is the most important thing I figured out in preparing for this sermon. So that proclaiming the gospel so that other people may be saved by coming to faith in Jesus Christ is not about being loud. It's not about being clever or articulate in what you say. It's not about being polished. It's about telling what we have experienced, what we know deeply, talking about what we have seen and heard and felt. God is light, and in God there is no darkness. I say that. If I say that because my eyes have seen it, then my proclamation is grounded and I speak out of sincerity. If our gospel is just based upon something we say, without that kind of foundation, can then be accused of having a faith that's all talk and no reality. So if this great end of the church is to be more than just nice words that somebody wrote a long time ago, a core of our church's life must be to proclaim to each other, to tell each other what we have heard, what we've seen, what we've felt, that makes us who we are, disciples of Jesus, that brings us to be together here in this place on Sunday morning. We must share moments when we have been moved, when we've been touched, when our vision has been expanded, that seem transcendent, And so that's the conclusion I reached in preparing this sermon, that we here at Wildwood Church, and I personally, should do more sharing of experiences that confirm that gospel message that God is light, and in God there is no darkness. It's to proclaim. It's to share. It's to listen then to each other, to notice and to hear that message for our salvation and for the salvation of all humankind. Last Sunday, I stopped singing during the last hymn because I wanted to listen. And I was really quite deeply moved to hear all of you wonderfully and with one voice together singing, "Here I am, Lord." You spoke of your experience. You sang of what you know, and you proclaimed the gospel for the salvation of humankind in doing that. There's a member of our church here today. Every time I walk up to him at coffee hour and say, "How are you doing?" he says, "I am blessed." And every time he does that, it surprises me, and I am blessed by hearing what he says. He proclaims the gospel for the salvation of humankind with those words. It's up to me to hear them. Whenever I think of one of those amazing moments when after Easter, after the resurrection of Jesus, he appeared to his disciples, my mind immediately goes to those banners that hang here on the wall during our season of Eastertide, created by the Eastertide group under the leadership of Mark Taylor. Those banners proclaim the gospel for the salvation of humankind. If I can just see them. I hope I never will forget the vision of a rainbow that I saw in Iona going for a walk one misty Scottish morning. The rainbow arose out of the ocean and went fully around and